Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Lee Pace on theater, Marvel movies, and his new film, Driven. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Yes, Mr. Lee Pace, that tall drink of water that is Lee Pace, returns to the podcast today. And it's been quite a while. It's been, I think, basically 5 years. He was one of the first guests, actually, on the podcast, if you want to go way back into the archives. Well, Lee, all 6'5" of him, has been working a lot in the last 5 years. He's obviously been a key component of the Marvel universe as Ronan the Accuser, but he, you know, did a couple seasons of Halt and Catch Fire, the Hobbit films, way back when. You know him from Pushing Daisies, but, you know, in recent years, I've seen him especially do some amazing work on the stage here in New York. He's just a fantastic actor. Last year, he was in the phenomenal production of Angels in America as Joe Pitt. What an undertaking by that entire cast, and Lee was excellent in it. So really thrilled to have Lee on to always talk acting and theater and film. He's, you know, a kindred spirit. He's a smart one and a talented fellow, and just always a delight to talk to. So thrilled to have him on the podcast as always. His new film, I should mention, is called Driven. It is the true-ish story based on true events of John DeLorean, who you may know as the famous, sometimes infamous perhaps, creator of the DeLorean car designer, kind of an icon in his own right. Way back when, you know, I think of course, the DeLorean from Back to the Future, but he was much more than that, including getting caught up in a kind of a crazy drug smuggling scandal that kind of undid his career. It's a fascinating, funny, dramatic, it's kind of a blend of a lot of cool different genres story. Lee plays John DeLorean, and he's alongside a great, stellar cast of actors, Jason Sudeikis, Judy Greer, Corey Stoll. A really fun movie worth checking out. I highly recommend it. I saw it a year ago, actually, at the Toronto Film Festival, and it's finally getting the release it deserves. It's in theaters August 16th. It's on digital and on demand August 16th, so you have no excuse. Find it at home. Go out and see it in a theater. Support good things. The movie is Driven. Other than that, what else to mention? Well, I caught up with our old good buddy Tom Hiddleston for MTV. Yes, so that's an on-camera interview. We just dropped it the other day, getting some really nice feedback from you guys out there. It's always fantastic to talk to Tom. I've been talking to him for 9 years now. Met him way back when at the 2010 Comic-Con when they trotted out the Thor cast. I met Hemsworth and the whole gang. And I you know, it's cliche to say, but I knew it. I knew it from the start when I met Tom that he was someone that I would get along with, but he was also just charming and talented and interesting. And, I'm lucky enough to call him an acquaintance and a friend and a kind of a work colleague in a weird way. He's done plenty of my sketches over the years, the podcast and now this new edition of a series we're calling Personal Space, which is kind of our intimate, full-on, like, video interview franchise that I've been doing for MTV in recent months. I did it with Shia LaBeouf, I did it with Jada Pinkett Smith, and Tom is the latest victim. He's currently starring in a production of Betrayal on Broadway. It's his Broadway debut, guys, so seek it out. I think it's only like 14 weeks or something. I'm sure tickets are going like crazy, but if you have the chance, get tickets to see Tom Hiddleston make his Broadway debut. It's Harold Pinter, it's a great playwright, it's a great piece of work, and I was lucky enough to see this in London, this production. Well worth checking out. Whether you're a big Marvel Hiddleston stan or not, this is a great piece of work. So yeah, those are my recommendations for the week. See Driven, try and get tickets if you're in the New York area, if you want to make a trip to see Betrayal. And also, if you can't see Betrayal, at least watch our Personal Space episode on MTV News' YouTube page with Tom Hiddleston. Those are my plugs for the week. Of course, in addition, I will remind you to review, rate, and subscribe to Happy, Sad, Confused. Spread the good word. And in the meantime, enjoy this chat with the great Lee Pace.
Didn't you love the Fury Road?
I loved it. Obsessed. It comes up on this podcast like every other week.
It's so good. And I heard he was making a movie. It was great. Remember this band of kids? He's just so smart, this world he created.
Oh, my God.
It's such a good thing.
Well, also his... I mean, I don't know. I'm sure you are, but like his filmography is amazing. Yeah. And his background.
Diverse, like so, like Babe, and then
Babe, Happy Feet. He did that. Remember Lorenzo's Oil? That movie with like Nick Nolte.
Oh, that's right.
He's done it all, and he's a doctor. He's just fascinating.
Like a doctor of medicine.
Yeah, he was a doctor before he became a filmmaker. I'm obsessed.
Cool.
Yeah.
How cool. And Dune, that's going to be something to look forward to.
I know, Denis, right?
Do you know anything?
I know nothing. I mean, I've done a lot with Timmy, but he went off to shoot Dune, so hopefully I'll catch up with Mr. Shaw.
Where are they shooting it? Like all over?
Yeah, they shot like in the desert, I forget where, but somewhere pretty out there. Oh. Certainly not in Burbank or anything like that.
And it's going to be a trilogy, right? Or two?
They're definitely planning, yeah, multiple. And I confess, did you read the book? I never read the book when I was a kid.
Yeah, the book is fantastic. Everybody says it's freaking incredible. Beyond.
And I know people don't necessarily love that movie.
Incredible. But have you seen that Jaworski's Dune?
Yes, I have.
So that's like... ruins this Dune.
Yeah, but again, that hit me I was 8 years old, and imagine seeing that at 8, right? And you're like, what the fuck am I watching? Like,
it's incredible.
But I know for the purists, that's not Dune. That's not like... Frank Herbert's Dune.
It's just not. Yeah, no. The book is so. I love sci-fi, and the book is so, like, cool. I haven't read the sequels and stuff, but I hear they're pretty fun too.
Yeah. You were one of the early ones on the podcast. I think I was still in Midtown, and this office wasn't here. But it's been overdue.
Yeah, no. I think it was probably. I'm trying to remember the first thing we would have. Would it have been on The Hobbit or?
No, it was. I can tell you exactly because I went back and looked. It was. It was Halt and Catch Fire 5 years ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I think you'd probably just shot Guardians or something. But it's been fun to kind of like see you every like 6 months or a year and see what you're up to.
It means I'm still working somehow. I keep convincing people to hire me.
So far, so good. Are you a veteran of podcasts now? Because I feel like back then you were still kind of like dipping your toe into like...
It depends on how much driving I'm doing.
Okay.
If I'm doing a lot of driving, I listen to a lot of podcasts. Yeah. If I'm not driving as much, then I don't listen to as many.
It's funny. So we ran into each other a few weeks back. Mm-hmm. On the street. I don't know about you. I'm surprised I run into as many people as I do just
walking. That's the magic of New York. You know, it never happens to people in LA because they're never kind of wandering around on the street.
Yeah.
They've got a life that it consists of everything they've chosen to enter into their life. This is like, I think most people's lives in America right now, they're just kind of insulated.
Creating their own bubble.
Yes. Bubbles.
Nothing.
You can't live in a bubble in New York. You can try to, but you will run into a lamppost.
Yes.
You will get cussed out on the street if you try to create your own bubble. It doesn't work in New York City.
I need it. I don't know about you, but I need that. Like, I fear I've lived in New York my entire life outside of like a few years for college. And like, I need to like collide with things because I fear I would just hide in a cave and too comfortable and too.
It's the best thing about this city is that like you'll go out to get your dry cleaning. Just get a bagel for breakfast, and your day kind of takes off.
Yeah.
You run into someone you didn't expect to see.
Yeah.
You'll get pulled in this direction. You know, that's the only way to live.
So how often do you get recognized? You're a tall man. You can stick out from a crowd. Are you able to kind of walk in anonymity, relatively speaking, in New York, or?
Sometimes. I don't know. It really depends on the day. There are some days that I get recognized quite a bit, and there's... I mean, most days I don't. Or I'll get like someone across the store or the movie theater will be looking at me like...
That lingering, that double take, that triple take.
Yeah, or that like, how do I know that guy? Does that guy owe me money?
and then there's just like Lee running away.
Probably.
Do you remember the first time you were like recognized for your work? Like, was that a moment to kind of start to get...
I'm trying to think of when it would have... What it would have been, because the first movie I did, I looked nothing like myself.
Yeah.
I think the first time it really started happening was Pushing Daisies, because I really looked like myself in that movie.
Yeah. And TV. Yeah.
And it was still network TV.
Yeah.
And network TV.
Yes.
But
so what? Okay.
But people are always so nice. I mean, I guess I mean, the people are just nice and complimentary. It's never weird.
Right. That's what people always say. It's true. It's like, if you want the hate, go online. If you want to see like the...
You can find it.
You can find it. If you want to be self-masochistic, go for it. It's there. I was just telling somebody, I was in my office recently, and I was just like, yeah, I'll check the comments like once every 6 months. I can't. That's all I can take. It's just like...
Yeah, no, I don't. I wouldn't even be brave enough to.
Good for you.
To try.
It's a healthy.
But no, when someone says something, it always. To be honest, it makes my day, and it makes me when I see someone that whose work I like, I'll go up to them and be like, "Hey, I liked you in this."
Do you?
I do it now because it's like you know it just because
you know what it means to you.
It's nice to hear.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've covered the background a little bit, but I want to fill in some gaps that we haven't talked about before. The important stuff, like when did the growth spurt happen? When did you suddenly turn into...
Oh, it was between my freshman and sophomore year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
I really went away that summer, grew so quickly. It's like I felt like my lungs were going to explode.
Something's wrong with me, Mom.
Stretched out. Yeah. Yeah, no, it happened very quickly.
I had the same kind of conversation. Gina Davis was just in here.
Oh, yeah.
And she's 6 feet tall. For a woman, that's quite tall. And I asked her, same question I'll ask you. Like, did that have an effect of being, like, it can go one of two ways. You can feel like the odd person out and suddenly feel like the spotlight's on you and feel like awkward. Or you can kind of own it and be like, oh, wait, this is kind of
cool.
To be
honest, I don't even notice it, really.
But do you remember? Was it...
I mean, there. You know, some days I probably thought it was pretty cool. But most time when I look at pictures of myself back then, I'm always like hunched over like this, trying to...
Still learning how to live in your body, perhaps.
Yeah, but also it's like I notice that I don't hear very well. And so I'm always kind of like going like this just to...
Well, no, in your later years, you're going to have some kind of like scoliosis because of us all short people that you've been...
kind of... Yeah, but I do. I hunch to more than I would like. I wish I would stand up straight.
Do you ever work with actors that are as tall or taller than you? There aren't many, probably. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. I'm sure I have, yeah. On The Hobbit, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely, there were. I mean, I remember there was the guy who played Ian's body double.
Uh-huh.
Paul was, like, massive.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so then going back, first actors that you... looked up to who were the and not literally we're off the height thing but who the first actors that
you idolized? Ian McKellen really? Always yeah
well from yeah. What had you seen him in
well I remember mostly because I was such a theater nerd in high school I would see pictures of him and Judi Dench in Macbeth a production that I never would have seen and I still remember that I remember like seeing the two of them looking like proper actors and that was right around the time that his Richard III movie had come out.
I like, remember that,
what an incredible movie that was.
Yeah. Wait, did he direct that or someone? No, it was Richard Longcrane. I remember now. Yeah, it's all coming back to me.
Yeah, but it was, I mean, yeah. And then, like, that was around the time of Gods and Monsters.
Yep.
And so, yeah, Ian McKellen has always been, was early on someone I was like, he's incredible.
So apropos
and,
to...
And such a chameleon, too. And so then to get to meet him and work with him, on The Hobbit was just like I couldn't believe my luck.
What's he like on set? He seems like such a gentle, fun, kind of mischievous kind of soul.
All of those things,
right?
Yeah, gentle, fun, mischievous. I mean, you laugh so hard with him on set because he's, you know, he's got such a great wily sense of humor.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, he seems kind of the model in many ways. Like professionally, certainly he's as great as they come.
Yeah,
but also just seems so comfortable in his own skin. And just like enjoys his life. He's still like, I don't know how old he is, but he's like still at the peak of his faculties, seemingly still doing stage work. Like that's the life you want.
He's an icon. He's an icon. And he's also, but like I remember on set, what I remember kind of watching him, because I remember thinking, oh, he's just going to, it's all going to be cake to him.
Mm.
But he takes the work so seriously.
He was digging into it. He was.
He's like, he puts himself in the fire with it. And that's, you know. I mean, that's admirable. That's fearless.
Yeah.
You know.
So you know, as I alluded to before, you're a New Yorker. You've lived most of your life here now. I mean, since you graduated, since you went to Juilliard.
Mm-hmm.
Did you kind of daydream in high school or earlier about like what a life would be like living in New York? Was that like, and where was that from? Was it from TV or film, from friends or family?
I remember the first time I came to New York, like because I flew into LaGuardia and I took a taxi to where I went to school.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking it looked like Sesame Street. That was my first impression of what the city was. Because my imagination of places before I actually go to them are you know, they're not very reliable for what they will actually be. Mm-hmm. But it was, I remember thinking, this looks just like Sesame Street.
Did it feel like home when you got here? Did it feel like...
I was so excited to be here. Yeah. I was just like 17 and thrilled.
Yeah.
Just so excited to be here. But then for the next 4 years, I didn't really get out much because
you were hardcore. Juilliard's legit.
We would just be like on the plaza right outside the school, right in Lincoln Center there, talking about Shakespeare and Chekhov all the time. That's what my lifestyle was in those days.
Did you have to work while you were in school, or were you able to kind of just do the...
There was no way to work. I worked during the summers, yeah. but there was no way to work while being in school because it was just, we would start classes at 9 and then you would have rehearsal until about 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
So it was pretty full. I feel like in my fourth year, I managed to squeeze a job in, towards the end of the fourth year, but yeah.
So, you know, it's a rarefied air when you can like live the life you kind of dream of. And in many ways, it seems like you are living that life, which is pretty awesome between the theater work and the film work. And you have like, I feel like you have like the right amount of fame and the right amount of opportunity. Like, I mean, there's always more you want, but like you're in a good spot. You're living a good life.
Nice to hear.
I'm your therapist
thank
today.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You're really putting it all in perspective.
Thank you. Be happy, Lee. Be happy. Things are going well. I guess my question is, let's take a moment to revel in this. Like, are there like aspects of your life that surpass even what the dream was? I mean, I was looking like at like interviews you've done in the last couple of years, and it seems like you're like friendly with Jessica Lange. Like, how can you even conceive of like, you know?
I never expected that. I wouldn't have expected that. And let me just say, she is the coolest person alive. The coolest person. So like chill and like cool.
Are those the parts of your life that kind of are the pinch me moments where like you befriend like in a legitimate way people that you had on a pedestal
like if I were to talk to me back when I was in high school, I would think that success meant one thing, but now looking back, I would have to say absolutely it's the getting to meet the people I've gotten the chance to meet and get to know. Absolutely, because what is it if you're not sharing it with people that are interesting and cool and add to the experience of life, really, you know?
And apropos of that, like, you know, you've done a tremendous amount of theater. You're going to always clearly go mm-hmm. back to the theater, especially here in New York. And we always hear about, you know, the theater community. And I want to know, like, what does that mean in practical terms? Like, when you think of, like, the theater community in New York, does that mean there's, like, a communal spirit where people are cheering each other on? Does that mean you're hanging out at Sardi's every night? Like,
they sometimes cheer each other on, but then they sometimes don't.
There must be less backstabbing than in film or TV in L.A., you would think.
Well, it's a smaller community.
Yes.
Because I when I think about the New York theater community, I don't just think it's the people who are making the plays and writing the plays. It's that audience.
Sure.
That audience of people that sees everything that's on stage that year. And they have opinions about the actors. They've watched actors grow. I mean, I feel, you know, part of that audience. So it's like I'm going to go see Seawall of Life later tonight.
Oh, I just saw it the other night.
Oh, is it? How is it?
It's great. It's excellent.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. Yeah. But I'm just Tom Sturridge, I've loved everything I've seen him on stage in. I just find him so compelling.
Totally.
I've never met him, but I find him so dangerous and compelling and fascinating. So I remember those performances. I feel like I remember theatrical performances much more detailed, more clearly than I remember film performances.
It makes sense. I mean, you're part of it. You're breathing the air. There's a tangible quality to it. What are the ones that stick out in your mind that like to this day?
Oh, I remember like seeing Janet. Janet McTeer do A Doll's House?
I never saw that production, but everyone talks about she's like one of those like that.
It was incredible. Yeah. It was just so fun and thrilling to watch, and it was one of those plays that I studied in school, so I. Yeah, I just found she was incredible. And I think it was before I went to Juilliard. No, it couldn't have been. Do you know what? I don't even know if I saw that production.
See, it becomes like in your mind's eye.
But I did see her do, I saw her do where she played Queen Elizabeth. And I must have fantasized about her doing a Doll's House.
But she killed it, apparently, so in your mind. That's what matters.
That it comes to mind so as funny. The thing that I remember most.
Yeah, I have that. I relate. I get it.
Clearly.
I get it.
That's insane
that I would answer that.
I'm glad you fact-checked yourself. Nobody was going to go back to the tape, Lee, but that's very sweet of you and honest of you to be like, wait, I'm lying.
I'm actually lying.
I'm lying to myself and to you.
That's how incredible Janet McTeer
she doesn't,
is.
You don't even,
you don't even have to buy the ticket and you will be talking about that play for the rest of your life. Yeah.
Well, one performance I definitely have seen, I saw you in last year. I paid you a visit,
really?
Actually.
No,
yeah, I was there. You might remember.
I remember.
Angels in America, unbelievable. I mean, a towering achievement to do. It's more than a play. It's like one of these things that's beyond it. I don't even know how to describe it for those that haven't seen it. Most people that are listening to this probably know what it is, obviously. Yeah. But it's a colossal work and not necessarily fun for an actor. It's probably as hard. I mean, fair to say it was as hard as you've ever had to work.
It was so hard. I mean, it was just, I mean, I cringe as an actor saying, oh, it's just hard work.
No, it's hard work.
But it was, to walk in Joe Pitt's shoes was hard. It was hard in rehearsal. It was hard, like, on repeat all week long. You know,
yeah.
It was just so hard. It was. I mean, it was. I can speak about it better than that. It was exposing in a way that I didn't. You can't anticipate, you know. But the play is so rich in detail and is so, you know, dangerous. You know that there was no way to not find yourself in it.
Well, I mean, he's a tortured character, and by sheer the act of being in it, I mean, the sheer hours you're doing 4 or 8 hours a day of it, of living in those shoes.
Well, there's like technical things that are stressful because that production was so huge that it was like there's lots of technical things, and everyone else had done it before, but I hadn't.
Right.
So I was at a fourth of the rehearsal time, but I also had to just pick up a lot of things very, very quickly for an 8-hour play. But then the stuff that was hard was just the emotional battering that character takes. It was just, I didn't see it coming. I knew it was going to be a big experience.
Yeah, you'd intellectualize it, but the emotion of probably actually going through it is a
thing. It was just, I mean, I find myself thinking about it the way you're thinking about a trauma that's happened to you. And I have to kind of be like, that wasn't real. That didn't happen to you. That happened to that character. But it's just the hardest thing. I mean, what that character had to go through, it's just the hardest thing anyone would have to have to really completely change who they are, you know, when there's resistance from everywhere around him to actually become someone else, to shed your skin and become someone else. Tough character. But very grateful that I'm not actually that character.
Did it change you as an actor, you think? Is there anything that you can think of that changes you going forward from that experience?
I don't know. We'll see. It was pretty
TBD.
Recent. No, I mean, I really want to do a comedy now.
Yeah,
I'll tell
that's
you that.
The change. Like, I need, you need to not live that life for
I really want to do something funny.
I alluded to this before. Your first feature role was as a trans character, and you've always you've done your fair share of queer LGBTQ characters throughout. Is that something important to you to represent that community you're a part of?
Yeah, I love queer people.
Why not play them?
Yeah, no, I do. I think it's absolutely. I mean, I was so proud to get cast as Calpurnia at that time. I just found it so exciting because I hadn't seen characters like her. Written with that level of complexity and dignity.
Yeah.
You know, and that was something I was excited about playing at that time.
And must have also, you know, just from a Cal's career perspective, it shows what you can do right off the bat.
It was a real feast. It was a real kind of
let me show you. Let me it's a calling card. I'll go to places.
I'm gonna do this.
Yeah. What do you need? What do you need?
Yeah. No. It was I look back on that and I just and I think I imagined at the time that they were all gonna be characters that.
That's the downside. You're supposed,
like they're all going to be challenging in that way. They're all going to be like open up sides of yourself that you didn't know were there. But even then, I guess I played characters that have are far from who I am a lot of times. But every time I look back at the character, I see more of myself than I expected I would.
Yeah. You're clearly talking about Marmaduke right now, the one that changed everything.
Yes, yes. And if you liked Phil and Debbie Winslow and Marmaduke, you'll love them in Driven.
I was going to say, you and Judy grew back together again. Did you guys help each other out back in Marmaduke? You're like, let's just get through this together.
We had so much fun doing that movie.
Yeah.
We had so much fun. It was the first time we'd worked together, and we were in Vancouver, which is one of my favorite places to work.
Yeah.
And we had the best time. We saw such good music. I remember there was this one whole scene where we're like arguing with each other, like our marriage is falling apart. Mm-hmm. And we just acted our tits off. And then we watched the movie and it's all played on the dog's face.
That's classic.
As the dog,
I love it. Makes me so happy.
And it's like Marmaduke looking at the cat saying like, the grown-ups are fighting.
Oh,
and
no. We're like, can you even hear what you're talking about? It's just
probably
like,
not. Oh, it's probably like one of the Charlie Brown, like wah, wah, wah.
Little did you know you were just the scenery
we
in a Marmaduke
really
movie.
We gave it everything we had. I would love to work with Judy Greer on every single thing I do.
She seems like a genuinely wonderful life force. Well, let's talk about Driven a little bit. I first saw this in Toronto about a year ago, actually, when it debuted. I really like this movie. It's a really unique piece of work and a great performance from you and Sudeikis, Corey Stoll, a great ensemble.
Yeah, it's such a fun group of people. And I'm glad you liked it.
So it's one of these things that like, I've got the Back to the Future poster here. So it's obviously, for those that don't know, DeLorean, the namesake of that classic car, was a very unique character, kind of an icon of the time, and kind of a genius, like a master kind of artist in a way.
Yeah, he had designed and manufactured the GTO, the Pontiac Firebird. I mean, he really created the idea of a muscle car.
Yeah.
Like a big engine in a small, cool car at a certain price point, you know, that's cool.
I would imagine there's a bunch of fun stuff beyond just the opportunity to, you know, wear cool shades and tennis shorts and turtlenecks in this one. Although those are fun too.
Just to hit the highlights.
Yeah, just hit the highlights. Yeah. I'm just trying to bring them in, Lee. If you want Lee Pace in tennis shorts. And then stick around for the acting.
Yeah.
But it is, it's kind of, you know what it reminded me of in a weird way? It's like almost like the Elmore Leonard like book that was never written. It's like all these quirky, odd characters colliding in this like too crazy to be true, but it is all true story.
Yeah, I mean, it's true-ish, you know, in a way that I found really interesting and fun. Because you've got at the center of the movie, these two kind of untrustworthy characters. You've got Jason's character, who is basically a con man, who is telling the story. So you've got that filter that you're telling the story through, and his friend, who's I hesitate to call DeLorean a con man because he's, I mean, to look at his track record, he's such an extraordinary innovator and takes responsibility for the things that he does and the decisions he makes.
Sure.
But he also thought a $30 million cocaine deal would save his automobile company. And
the demerit in the personality column.
But what I see in him is someone who just has like a magical thinking.
Yeah.
Has a kind of like, well, we have a money problem. How can we get money quick?
Yes.
Let's sell some drugs. You know what I mean?
Well, and a uniquely kind of like American story. Like, you know, it could be argued that like a lot of, you know, the good and the bad of Americans is sort of like the pursuit of material things and status at all costs.
Yeah.
And it seems like he's like holding on at no matter what, even if it's like, obviously a fucking horrible decision to make. Like he needs to maintain the status he's had.
Well, there's one, my favorite line when I watched the movie back at the premiere, I was like, there was this line that said, he said, you know, I always lead from the front.
Right.
And he's about to walk into the Coke deal. And there's just this, this level of awareness and fearlessness,
right,
of kind of like, you know, it could all come crashing down in 10 minutes, but I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not afraid of it. It's not going to knock me down. I know what I'm worth, and I'm unafraid.
Yeah.
I'm unafraid of the decisions because I know how to handle myself going forward. And I like that about him. Yeah. I like that kind of, he's just never going to say die.
Yeah.
You know, and even after the Coke scandal happened, he opened this a company to design luxury watches.
Yeah.
And he had pre-orders, investors. I mean, money was coming in, and he never made a single watch.
Amazing.
It's fascinating. I think he would have, I'm sure, if he could have.
Yeah.
I don't think it actually came to that.
Well, it's a quality piece of work. And as I said, Nick Hamm, right?
Nick Hamm.
Yeah, the filmmaker. He did assemble a really great cast. It's funny, you know, I had, this is a tangent, but you'll appreciate it. I had Corey Stoll come in a couple years ago when he was he had done a lot of theater, but he was starting to really hit it, I think, thanks to the Netflix show.
Yeah.
Right. And it occurred to me that we were grade school friends. And he obviously, we went to the same grade school together. He reminded me. He's like, wait, did you go to PS 87? I'm like, oh yeah. Hey, Corey. Oh, Corey.
That's
obviously
crazy.
He didn't look the same at 12. Isn't that bizarre?
I love Corey. He always plays such tough, hard ass guys and stuff, but he's the sweetest, coolest person.
He's doing, I just saw it was announced, he's going to do Macbeth with his wife, I think, as Lady Macbeth.
Oh, no way. Well, I knew he was doing Macbeth. I'm so excited that they're going to do that together.
That's going to be amazing.
What a dope idea.
Yeah.
I love that play so much. Mm. I'm so excited to see him play it.
Yeah.
That's going to be a good one. And it's at CSC, which is one of my favorite places to see stuff.
Have you done a lot of Shakespeare?
Not since school.
A little bit Juilliard, yeah, right.
Yeah, not since school. We did a Shakespeare every year while we were in school, but I haven't done any since I'm out. I'm very ashamed to say.
What about musicals? You've never, according to the theater list I saw, I didn't see any.
No, I've never done a musical either.
Is that surprising? I mean, do you?
I would like to.
You sang in Pettigrew, Miss Pettigrew.
Yes. I would like to do a musical, but it hasn't happened yet.
I could see you as a Skye Masterson. I could see you as a.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Right?
Yeah, that's a good one.
I have a soft spot for Guys and Dolls. That's one of my favorites. It's in that vein of the classic American standards.
Yeah, well, I do remember getting someone gave me that Guys and Dolls that Nathan Lane did.
Yeah, I went to see that, and it was a famous, obviously, production. It was Peter Gallagher, amazing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right, Peter Gallagher. But I never saw it. I mean, we can put this next to a Doll's House, but I had
maybe I didn't either. Now I don't know.
I had listened to that soundtrack so many times and looked at the pictures on the CD cover so many times that I knew Nathan Lane. I knew what he was about.
And then you became...
Yeah, got a chance to work with him, which was...
Must have been amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Jumping back and forth. Okay, so filling some gaps in the film work, we alluded to this a little bit before, when we were talking about Jessica Lange and people and Nathan Lane, but talk to me about how you quiet the nerves when you are being directed by a De Niro or a Spielberg. Is it just you go into kind of the Juilliard training, the focus that you know your craft? Are you able to kind of quiet the half of your brain that's in awe of somebody, or what happens?
I'm not always successful at quieting the nerves, to be honest. But I think the only thing I can do is just be as prepared as I can possibly be.
That's it.
Just be prepared and just remember with someone like that I'm here to serve your story.
Right.
That's the only function I have. So the clearer I am about what you need, the better this will go for everyone.
have you seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood yet, by the way?
No, I haven't seen it. I'm dying to see it. We just went on vacation, so there was not movie theaters where we were. Is it great?
It's great. The reason I mention it is there's I think you'll appreciate it, as I'm sure you know, it's about an actor. Leo plays, and he's amazing, as you could. But, well, there's without ruining anything, there's an amazing brain freeze actor moment within a scene where he just can't. He just shuts down, and you just see him go through the paces of trying to summon the words, and he can't. And I'm sure any actor can you relate that to any?
Oh, well, there was when we were on stage at Angels, I had an early previews it was like one of the first times in front of an audience. In that scene where me and Nathan come back as ghosts with Pryor, I got my line scrambled and like a line came out early and I looked at Andrew's face and I was like, that wasn't right, was it? And he was like, and it messed up his next line. And so there was just like this.
Where do we go from here? How do we do this?
It's like everything slows down.
Yep.
Everything gets very, you just feel like all eyes are on you and the tomatoes are about to start flying.
Reality is like 1%, maybe the audience.
Yeah.
Might
like
know
going,
it.
Wait, like, did something just happen?
Yeah.
but yeah, I remember, yeah, that was pretty good. Oh my God. I'm going to die. No, but that's, yeah.
But never in front of Daniel Day-Lewis. You got it. You got it right for him.
Oh God, no, no, no! Thank God, thank God, thank God. I'm trying to think if there were any, you know, really. I mean, no, I can't.
You're a professional. You got it down.
I'm trying to think. I don't know. I'm pretty easygoing when it comes to. I mean, I just try to be as prepared as I can. So if I know my lines, then I know that I can just listen and respond. Yeah.
Sounds easier said than done the way you say it, but yes, that's the baseline for an actor. Are you able to? Do you find that like when you're most relaxed on a set is when the best work comes? When you are in kind of like a
is being on the edge
helpful or not?
Yeah, it's always different. For *Halt and Catch Fire*, for example, that first season, I was not relaxed at all. I just felt very. I didn't understand the character as well as I would have liked, and I don't know. I just felt very anxious that whole first season. I mean, it was also kind of this experience where I had gone from shooting the pilot to doing reshoots in New Zealand for The Hobbit, and then shooting all of Guardians of the Galaxy, and then going back to shoot the whole first season. So I hadn't been home in a year.
Yeah.
And I just...
You were out of your comfort zone. You were just...
Yeah, I just did not understand the character. And I watch it back, and... When I kind of surrendered to that frustration, as opposed to being like, everything's fine, I've got it all under control, I'm going to play this guy the way I've seen other guys like this on television, which I think was the first couple episodes of it, I just didn't like relax into that anxiety and chaos.
Yeah.
And once I had, I think I found, you know, So I guess to answer your question, it's like always different.
Sure.
You know, there are some situations where it's like you know, like with Driven, it was like the actual acting work in it was a dream because we shot it right after the Hurricane Maria had destroyed Puerto Rico.
Right.
So the difficult things on that movie was getting water to everyone to bring home,
right.
Or, you know, making sure the people were safe, you know? So
suddenly like, the acting seemed like the easy part.
Yeah, the acting suddenly became like that was like it was imperative to make everyone laugh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To get to be an entertainer.
Yeah.
So that it's like it's always just different. It's always the way it's going to be.
Well, and also people run their sets in much different ways. A Spielberg set is run in a much different way than David O. Russell or whoever. They
I mean with Spielberg, it was like, such a kind of creative, like confident. Place. I just felt, I was like, gosh, this is incredible.
Well, yeah, I'm sure every department head is like an Oscar winner, and like, it's just like you're in Kushner writing, and like Daniel Day-Lewis, it's like, oh, it's the all-stars.
Yeah, but like for me, like little me in that, I was just like, I didn't feel as though I shouldn't be here. I felt like, God, what a privilege this
is. I'm taking care of. I just need to keep up. And
Now I just do what I do in this little bit of time that I've got. Now I do what I do. But there have been times that have been a more kind of, you know, dramatic sets, but that kind of creates something interesting too. It's like, you know, when someone pitches a fit and everyone suddenly, like, the atmosphere lifts and there's that kind of like that sense of danger around. Yeah. It's great.
Oh, you're talking about Marmaduke again.
Oh, yeah. I know. I mean, that dog was unreasonable, but a brilliant, brilliant actor.
A couple random things that I saw in the copious research. Tell me if true or not. Are you an avid skydiver, Lee Pace?
I was just asked that question. I don't know where.
Yeah,
where
this
did
is
you
one of those crazy.
This?
I don't know. It's probably IMDb or something stupid. But like, it pops out. You're like, I need to ask about that. Have you ever skydived?
I skydived once.
So you're an avid skydiver, apparently. Congrats.
I guess so. Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I would do it again. I would definitely do it again. But
weird.
I mean, I'm not. Yeah.
So. Enjoying dance offs in between takes.
Another like,
yeah, did that come
done
up too?
It once, yeah.
It's not so stupid. These things aren't they like in the way.
Where is that? Where
I don't. It probably was IMDb or Wikipedia. But those are the two stupid sources.
But okay, yeah. Well, I did it once on Twilight. Me and Mia Maestro, because we shot that whole battle sequence at the end of Twilight. It was months we were doing that, months and months, and. And we couldn't leave.
You're like, are we in hell?
I was just like, well, me and Mia would go down to New Orleans.
Yeah.
We would just spend all of our time in New Orleans, and we get this call like, you need to, we're shooting with you.
So
we would go to.
So, funny.
So I think we did it just to kind of have fun one day.
I feel like one of my great regrets is like before I knew you, like I did, and like you, I didn't talk to you during Twilight, but I, working at MTV, I. Did a lot with Twilight. Like I always say, like I think I've interviewed Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson more than any other human being on the planet. We did specials and red carpet things. And like I'm just like so. Like someone should have, whether it's me or not, should have done the ultimate doc book tell all because it was just an amazing part to be a part of that phenomenon. From
it
start
was
to finish.
So surreal. I mean, I because I wasn't super familiar with the movies before I did that. but then, yeah, I found myself on set and it was, you know, there are all these other vampires around. And we shot all that stuff, that battle stuff in an ag barn in outside Baton Rouge. So this is like where when they're not shooting movies, they're auctioning cattle.
Something apropos of that.
That's
maybe.
Like where, so it's like where there's basically this big kind of white mat full of paper snow that they would wet down every day. So after months of this, the paper would start to mold in places that would pool with the water. So it was like a science experiment.
You just looked at Bill Condon and be like, I trusted you, man. This is what you...
Here we are. But it's like when I think about like the overhead, big overhead wide shot, it's literally like a Petri dish under a microscope.
How often when you've done Ronan the Accuser, do you ask the makeup folks for assurances that there will be no lasting damage to your skin?
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
I would be like freaking out about that.
It took when I did, they figured it out now, but when I still had the black stuff on for Guardians of the Galaxy, it would take as long to take it off as it did to put it on. It was like,
did you feel like encased in a tomb? Like it was like a little bit.
And sometimes when I would sweat underneath it, it would form little bubbles and you'd pop them and like sweat would drip out. See, it's not all.
No, this
glitter.
Is why you got into it. were you as surprised as anybody that you got to come back for Captain Marvel? Like, had they hinted, like, we might call upon you when needed?
Well, I mean, anything can happen in the MCU. Yeah. Actually, anything. So I was so thrilled to hear from them because I was rehearsing Angels. And it meant flying to LA on a Monday.
Yeah, talk to me. What was that? How many did you have to do that a few times? Like how?
Oh, just once. Oh, yeah, we fit it all into like one afternoon because I got in around right before lunchtime, and then we shot a couple things, and then I came in early the next day, did one more shot, and then I was on a flight home.
They know how to do it efficient. Good for them.
Yeah, they do exactly what they needed, and it was. I mean, talk about surreal to like have been on stage with that for all week and then fly to LA. I mean, it was great, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was just what I needed.
I'm sure. Everybody needs that in a heart-wrenching, soul-searching play.
Yeah,
go
this
do a
kind of punishing
Marvel
play. And they show up and there's like all my Marvel friends there. And I'm like, hey, what's up? Back in the saddle. You know, my mark?
What's been the best thing that's come out of your association with Marvel? Is it, I mean, career-wise, it's nice visibility, etc. I'm sure you get some cred with nieces or nephews or kids, I'm sure.
I would say without question the fans.
Yeah.
It's such a the fan base for those movies is such a cool, committed group of people. And I've been to a couple of the conventions.
Right.
And just people are so cool about them. They're so knowledgeable. They're just... like excited. They're into the storytelling. They're into the size of that story. They're into the characters. And I get it. I like it and I get it.
Yeah. Whether it's even specifically that or not, when you came in, we were geeking out about all these movie posters. That's why we both do what we do. We love this stuff. Like, yeah. Whether it's Marvel or Dune or whatever we're talking, or Shakespeare.
I know. I like a good story. I like it. And that's what's so fun about those MCU stories, is that the stories are big. They're like epic.
Yeah.
And their freedom and size and expression, you know, and diversity.
You know what's fun too? I don't know if I'm sure you've experienced this. Like, so I just did a thing with Tom Hiddleston, who's coming to Broadway in Betrayal.
Oh, cool.
And like, I went to see it in London, and like, I saw like people were there. There were a lot of like Marvel fanboy and fangirls there because they wanted to see Tom, and they're being exposed to Harold Pinter.
Cool.
Like I'm sure that happens. Like,
it happened with Angels.
I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's cool. You know, I mean, you really feel like, I mean, even though I'm completely buried up in, you know, blue and makeup, it's, yeah, no, I feel like a connection with them,
yeah.
You know, and I feel, yeah. So that's the coolest thing I found about the MCU.
What's coming up for you? Do you have a theater, film? What's the next?
Nothing really right now. I'm kind of just looking for stuff.
Nice.
I've been reading a bunch of stuff, but not really connecting to it. And that feels, I mean, it actually feels pretty new. I've always felt like I want to, you know, I don't like not working. And yeah. I want to keep on set or, you know, with stuff going on. And it's kind of an interesting time right now where I'm like, well, I just want to take a beat and really make sure I'm connected to the things that I
do. This is a good
do.
Philosophy to have, I think. Is there a kind of material you're not getting that you wish people would think of you for?
Well, like I said, I want to do something funny. So I'm really looking for a good comedy, something fun. Well, I don't know. I don't feel like people make comedies like they used to.
No.
You know, like I think that's large part to the audience, because the audience is amused in a different way than they used to be.
Yeah.
You know, I think it creates like an interesting space for comedy.
What are your gold standards for comedy when you think back to being a kid or whatever? Like what makes you laugh, or what made you laugh when you were a kid or even as a grown up?
I mean, I had no taste when I was a kid. So
the things
made me laugh when I was a kid. I mean, not when I was a kid, but I mean, a movie that we watched a couple months ago that I still think about from time to time is When Harry Met Sally. There's something about the humor in that movie that is not, like, it's not shock. It's shocking and laughing out. There's obviously that one great moment
right.
in it.
Yeah.
But you look at it now, and there's like, it's funny in service of a bigger story. It's not.
It's people talking about real things. It's real relationships. It's.
You laugh because you get it.
Yeah.
You're laughing as a kind of like, me too. Fuck me too.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're watching it, so I don't know. I think that there's something. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. We'll get something funny to the team of Lee Pace. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll secret that out into the universe. Everybody should. There's humor in Driven, by the way. There's a little bit of
everything. Driven is really funny. Yeah, that was fun. It was funny to make. I mean, gosh, Judy Greer and Jason.
Yeah, you can't
when they
not
get
have
going.
Fun. Yeah, yeah.
It's like just about the funniest, absurd banter you've ever heard.
I'm sure. I'm sure.
But
yeah. Well, everybody should check it out. It's a great piece of work, as always. I look forward to seeing what's next, whether it's on the stage or on the big screen or small screen. It's always good, man. And
hey, Josh, you're the best.
Thanks buddy.
For talking to me again.
Always a pleasure.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.